Welcoming back to the show this morning, Fran Mako of AAA. Good morning, Fran. How are you?
Good morning. Morning to everyone. I'm fine. How about you?
I can't complain. Thanks, Fran. So, obviously, marijuana, the product sales are now legal as of earlier this month. And the one big concern that people have, general public, even lawmakers, people who are high behind the wheel. You and I have talked about this extensively, and we knew this was coming. And one lawmaker in particular has now proposed a bill to expand the lessons that are being taught to teen drivers, to kids who want to get their driver's license. They would like to see them do a specific course in understanding impaired drivers, but specifically drivers who are high on marijuana using cannabis before driving. And what's interesting, Fran, is they said AAA would create the curriculum, but you guys already have curriculum, essentially, well, that's been in place, informational videos and things like that, don't you?
Yeah. Let me just clarify.
Please,
the state representative is from Line, and I think her name is Representative Cheeseman.
Yes.
Her proposal was that new drivers, whether they're teens or even adults, go through a four-hour class on impairment driving marijuana.
Mm-hmm.
I believe in the story she referred to Massachusetts and how Massachusetts adopted a curriculum as part of the DMV adopted a curriculum as part of their driving education.
Correct.
That involves marijuana and impairment and driving. The curriculum was developed by AAA. That is in Massachusetts. It's less than an hour. It's not a four-hour program. It's part of an overall curriculum. Now, in Connecticut, driving schools already present an eight-hour safe driving practices class for new drivers. Kids have to go through that. If you're under a certain age, 16 or 17, your parents have to sit in for 2 hours. Part of that curriculum, I checked with our driving school, part of that curriculum includes information on alcohol and driving and marijuana and driving. So what I'm saying is it already exists in Connecticut. Now, she's looking for a separate four-hour class. Personally, I think 4 hours is over. Really, really long time.
Okay. So back me up for a second, Fran. Thank you so much, first of all, for the clarification, because to me, this sounded like a no-brainer. I was like, why even debate on this? Obviously, anyone would agree. But you're saying that there's already curriculum in place for any driver who would, well, potential driver.
Any new driver, yes.
Any new driver has to already take a course that talks about not just impaired driving, but specifically cannabis use. When did that go into effect? Do you remember? Because I don't remember talking about that.
It's part of an eight-hour safe driving practices classes that new drivers have to go through. I mean, it's got to be more than 15 years. And as you know, it's an eight-hour class. So, I mean, one portion of the class focuses on impairment, and it focuses on alcohol and driving and marijuana or drugs, generally drugs and driving, and, of course, marijuana is part of drugs.
Right.
Our driving school does that. I'm pretty sure I am 99.99999% sure all driving schools do that. Now, again, what they focus on is up to them. I know when my son went through driver's ed, he had to go through the class. It was during the pandemic. It was Zoomed, so I kind of sat in on it. He was 22 at the time, so I really didn't have to participate because he was over 18. But they did focus on alcohol, and they did focus on marijuana. So now what we at AAA have been doing on our own also, you know, separate from the driving school, is we offer presentations to high school kids. And our program is called Shifting Gears. We've been doing this over the last 5 years. We've been delivering to area high schools this presentation that focuses on the dangers of marijuana in driving. We're also getting ready to roll out a similar program that's aimed at businesses who wish to educate or inform their employees now about the dangers of marijuana. This is aimed at an older audience, because I feel the middle age audience, you know, we offer, the state offers educational programs, driver's ed, to young kids, mm-hmm. and driver improvement classes to older folks. But that middle ground there of many, many drivers between, say, 30 and 50 doesn't go through any education unless they seek it on their own. So our programs are free for the asking. Since recreational marijuana has become legal at the start of the year, we felt it was necessary to expand our existing high school program to target adult drivers. And again, the presentation, both are about an hour long. They're very matter of fact, no judgment. I always preface my presentations with, this is merely informational in nature. It's not my place to tell people, especially kids, what they can and cannot do when it comes to recreational marijuana, even medical marijuana. I'm not your mother. I'm not your doctor. And we just present the facts, mm-hmm. and how marijuana can impair your judgment, your perception, possibly your coordination and alertness behind the wheel. That's all we're very, very concerned about.
Yeah,
because it is AAA's mission. Traffic safety is AAA's mission, and to help educate various stakeholders.
Mm-hmm.
Keeping safe on the roads.
I was going to say, it's the difference between if you want to get a life coach versus like a counselor. You know, you're giving guidance, you're giving facts, but you're not telling people how to live their lives. So, Fran Mako of AAA, if there's a business out there right now, they're listening and they're like, ooh, this might be a good idea, actually, with the changes, and we don't want to judge or, you know, or tell employees that they can or cannot use marijuana, but we also want them to really understand the weight of their actions if they do get behind the wheel of a car. Can they request that from AAA? Like, how does that work?
Sure. We have a website. If you are a high school teacher, we've been presenting to many, many health classes over the past 5 or 6 years in the area. Just go to AAA.com/shiftinggears, and you can register for a class. And one of us, you know, depending on your schedules, we will come out. Businesses can go to AAA.com/corporateconvos, corporate, C-O-N-V-O-S, and register. Now, we haven't presented to any businesses yet, because this is brand new. And somebody, one of us, there's only two of us in the department, will most likely me, will be making, can make the presentation depending on someone's schedule, a company's schedule. Companies that would be interested generally would have fleets, employees who drive, you know, for the business, or many companies have health fairs, and they'd like to educate their employees on various aspects of health and health safety. We would target that audience.
So because many companies are potentially expecting their employees to drive and undergo some type of driver improvement class, there's a new presentation focusing on adults and cannabis use. If you go to AAA.com, that's AAA.com/corporateconvos, like conversations, you will find there a place where you could fill out a form at no cost, might I add, to have in-person or virtual learning from AAA and talking about cannabis and how it impacts your driving. So, Fran, kind of walk us through. You were just starting to talk about it.
Sure.
Which companies do you suspect should be at the top of the list? Who should be requesting AAA's help yesterday?
I hate to name companies because I don't want to imply that their drivers
industries?
Or their folks are...
Industries, then. No companies. Industries.
Delivery industries, utilities.
So goods, services. That's what I was kind of getting
service,
at. So like
yeah,
if,
service.
Even if you own like a pizza joint that delivers,
yeah,
you're talking
be,
that. Okay.
It could be anything, really. Mm-hmm. You know, our concern is not that people are smoking, because again, or eating edibles or whatever, you know, that's not my claw.
Right, you don't
care.
Our
concern is when that impairment intersects with driving behavior. Mm-hmm. And we've seen in recent months, in fact, more likely over the last year, the number of fatalities involving wrong-way drivers. Most, if not all, of those fatalities that occurred with wrong-way drivers were because of speeding and impairment, some sort of impairment, whether it's alcohol or drugs. And that has caused these deadly crashes. So these presentations address the misconceptions about pot and driving. It focuses on AAA research. It touches on enforcement and state laws. It explains the physical, cognitive processes affected by marijuana use. You know, a lot of people, you know, a lot of the kids especially ask, what's better, alcohol or marijuana? Well, anything that impairs you, that affects your perception, your good judgment while you're behind the wheel, is not good. One is neither better than the other. But, you know, despite what many people think, marijuana does affect your driving abilities. Mm-hmm. You know, many times you're so relaxed, your reaction time is very, very slow. You know, other people get very agitated. Marijuana affects different people differently.
Mm-hmm.
But you definitely have slower reaction times. Many times it's harder to stay in your traffic lane. Your perception is affected because it's harder to judge how far away a car is from you.
I mean, honestly, Fran, it's logical. I'm sorry.
If you have
a sip of alcohol, if you have a major medication that's been prescribed to you by a doctor, I mean, I can't tell you how many times if I've gone to a doctor and they're like, hey, we're going to put you on this. Make sure that you either take it first thing in the morning after a good meal. Don't drive right away, or take it at night when you're done with the day. More and more doctors are prescribing pills for the first thing in the morning or right before you go to bed, for one of the reasons having to do with driving concerns.
Right.
I mean, it's not I don't know. It's really no, to me, irony that as soon as you put a substance in your body, you have to know that it could impact you, maybe a little, maybe a lot. But that's really what this presentation is for. And really quick, Fran, how long is the presentation? What should companies expect if they sign up for this with AAA?
An hour.
An hour,
an
that's
hour,
it.
Maybe a little longer than an hour.
Wow.
I mean, it's very difficult for people to sit for such a long time. That's why a four-hour class, there would be no incentive for someone to take a four-hour class. For example, the driving improvement classes that we do, it's a four-hour class. I have a difficult time filling 4 hours in a program aimed at older drivers.
Why four? What is that, like a magic number? What's with the 4 hours?
That's mandated by the state.
Got it.
And there's an incentive for an older driver. There's a discount on their insurance. No such thing exists right now. So, I can hear the silent scream in your audience from parents who feel that their kids have to go through another 4 hour class. In addition to the 8 hour class,
yeah.
In addition to the 2 hours that they have to sit in,
right.
As parents. So, I mean, I think an hour is more than adequate to cover mm-hmm. all the dangers. We just want to make people aware that many folks are overconfident in their control of their risk on the road. They think they're better drivers than they really are if they have one or two drinks.
But that's because they lose sight of perception. They're not themselves. They're different than they were without the substance. That idea of what's real and what's imaginary kind of gets blurred together. So again, Fran, that link, if people want to sign up for this, especially if you are a company, it's AAA.com/corporateconvos. Or if you want to see the high school presentation, that's AAA.com/shiftinggears. And I so appreciate you, Fran Mako, not just for coming on this show, but for doing these presentations a lot of the time in person or virtually with so many different people across the state. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Talk to you soon.
Sounds good. Fran Mako with AAA right here on WICC.
Family. relationships, and personal growth. Professional counselor Julius Dudix is here to help. Melissa in the Morning on WICC 600 AM and 107.3 FM.
We're chatting with Julius this morning about a speech that has gone viral. Over the weekend, there was the Critics' Choice Awards, and Brendan Fraser won Best Actor for his role in the movie The Whale. Now, if you don't know, Brendan Fraser has gone through a very difficult time. He was sort of exiled, if you will, from Hollywood after he made accusations in 2018 against a very prominent person in Hollywood that they sexually assaulted him. And he essentially felt like from there his career had the lights turned out. He had also gone through a wicked divorce after having three children, one of which was on the autism spectrum. He lost his mother. He also went through a lot of surgeries over the years, and he went through weight issues. And so he found himself stuck in a really bad place. And all of a sudden, he found himself coming to the surface. I wanted to play for you the part of this speech that has gone viral in the last couple of days on the internet. And we're going to dive into his words with Julius right here on WICC. Take a listen.
If you, like a guy like Charlie, who I played in this movie, in any way struggle with obesity, or you just feel like you're in a dark sea, I want you to know that if you too can have the strength to just get to your feet and go to the light, good things will happen.
So it's interesting, Julius, because for anyone who has followed you on WICC over the years, your mantra, I think what you're known for, is the idea of don't stay stuck. Which is exactly what Brendan Fraser, I think, is saying. Wouldn't you agree that if you can get to your feet and go to the light, good things could happen for you? Good morning.
Good morning. Thanks for having me back, Melissa. Yeah. It is so powerful. It is just so very powerful. If you have the time to slow yourself down and look at your own life and ask, what does that mean to me? And life goes by so quickly. And sometimes people tell themselves they don't have the strength to get to my feet and go to the light. But you have to build your life on truth. And the truth is you do have the strength, but you've just taught yourself that I don't have the strength. It's such a powerful, powerful speech, Melissa. And I'm so glad you're doing this, because there are so many listeners out there that have told themselves year after year after year, it's just who I am. It's just who I am. I can't change. It's just who I am. And really, on a deeper level, what we're really talking about is change. And change is just a word. But we have to move toward the action of change. And that means getting to your feet, going to the light, and kind of moving forward that way. But maybe the other question, I guess when you sent me that, My wife looked at me and she said, wow, what does it really mean?
Yeah, what does that mean? And, you know, I'm glad that she asked you that. Were you stumped a little bit? I mean, I know this is your line of work, but I think everyone was inspired by it, right? You know, people watch that and they go, wow, look at his story. How did he do it? But that is the question. How do you do it? Yeah. I mean, because there are people listening this morning who feel like I've had a death in the family. I've lost a job. Right. I have gained a lot of weight. And there are even sadder stories than that. I've had to bury a child. I've had, you know, whatever the case may be. And the idea of getting on your feet just doesn't even seem like a reality of this universe.
Right. And it takes a lot of introspective thought. And it takes a lot I guess you've got to ask yourself, when am I going to be sick and tired of being sick and tired about either my weight or my whatever behavior, whatever darkness you're in? You don't have to stay stuck in darkness. And man, that has been my message for years with people. But quite often, some people come to my office and say, Julius, it's just who I am. No, it's not who you are. I've dealt with so many in terms of alcoholism over the years. And they look at me and they say, it's just who I am. And they'll do well for 6 months and then they'll relapse and they'll come back in the office. Well, Julius, it's just who I am. No, it's not who you are. There have been so many people that have found freedom from darkness. But you've got to start by asking yourself the question, what is it going to take for me to actually get a hold of this and begin to move forward? And as he said, get to your feet and go to the light. But then, go ahead.
So we're talking to our professional counselor, Julius Dudix, this morning after a very powerful speech over the weekend from actor Brendan Fraser, who went through a very dark period. And it was pretty public. I mean, a lot of it was unknown, but his demise was made very public, and then he sort of disappeared. People didn't ask about him. People didn't know what was going on with him. And then he resurfaced recently and is now the best actor for the Critics' Choice Award. And he addresses this idea of staying stuck and somehow finding your way to your feet. Is there a point, though, Julius, where, and this is tricky, this is where it sort of gets into sort of mental health, unfortunately, but would you say there's a point, though, where people feel like I'm sick of being sick, but then they cross over this really murky line of, you know what, I have nothing to live for. Like, I'm not only am I sick of being sick, but I have no purpose. I have no reason to be here. And that's a very scary thing that I think could happen, you know, maybe not overnight. But it does happen where you're in this place, and the idea of you saying, let's get on our feet and move forward, well, that's not even a concept worth thinking about.
Yeah. You know what happens, and this is the way that I've kind of wrestled it down myself, is that there are different compartments in your brain.
Mm.
And when you go into that compartment and you close the door, then all of a sudden you stay comfortable in that compartment. You're becoming comfortable in your uncomfortableness. If that makes sense.
It does. It becomes a way of life. You don't know anything. Yeah. You almost forget that you lived a life before this. Yes, I know what you're saying.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. And so what has to happen is you've got to move toward the door to begin to crack it open to see maybe this isn't really what life's all about. Maybe I can move forward. Maybe there's something out there in terms of the light that will help me. And if the light means for you self-help books, if the light means your faith, if the light means a relationship, but move toward that light. And here's the other thing: when you sent that link to me, and I looked at it, I thought to myself, "Wow, you know, the light is so cool because everything seems to be attracted to light. Ships, you know, for centuries use starlight and moonlight, and ships have used lighthouses. But everything, you know, rises and sets by the light." It's got to be moving toward that light, whatever that looks like for you, in order to change the behavior and get out of that compartment. And then that's what, you know, my goal is, as people come to my office, is to help them really say, hey, do I really want to remain stuck? And then the issue then becomes, why is it so hard for most people to change?
After a very inspirational speech went viral, I wanted to talk to Julius a little bit about this idea of being stuck and somehow getting on your feet and finding the light. So, Julius, you prompted a great question, which is, why do humans stay stuck? Why is it so hard for us to change?
Yeah, that's a great question because, you know, the abnormal has been replaced with a normal. In other words, in your thinking that the darkness that you're in, the frustrations that you feel, that's normal for me. It's normal. And really that's abnormal. And what has to happen is you've got to replace the normal for the abnormal, but you've conditioned your brain to think, gee, the darkness that I'm in is just part of my life. And I don't know if I'll ever be able to know what really true normal is. And so what you have to do is, yeah, go ahead.
I was going to ask, though, Julius, do you also think that's a societal norm? And I ask this because, and maybe I'm just more hyper aware of it because of my own personality. I'm very glass half full. Heck, the glass could have nothing in it, and I still think it's a full glass of water. Like, I'm just a very positive person. And right. I feel that I get called out so much for my energy and positivity and happiness. Like, this can't be real. This can't be real. And it's interesting because even if I'm trying to uplift people, it almost annoys them Not always, but sometimes it almost annoys them because it's not what the societal norm would be. Life can't be good. Work is hard. No one's making enough money. Kids are difficult. Families are difficult. Friends are difficult. Life is hard. So much bad news around. So when you're a light in a dark world, first of all, the fact is we think we live in a dark world. You know what I mean? Right. Like, some of that is societal, I would think, too. You know, the idea of staying stuck and having it be a hard time to change, you're not really, there's no real promotion of being happy or finding a good place because you're odd. I mean, I've literally been called weird or odd or mentally off because I'm naturally a happy person. Like, that's a societal norm, which to me is bizarre. Like, that's bizarre, but that's the world that I guess we live in a little bit.
I had a guy 1 year years ago who was out of prison, and he came to me and I said, so what did all this time in prison teach you? And he said something very revealing. He talked about the power of choice, and Melissa, you've chosen to live a happy life, a fulfilled life, trying to see the glass half full. At the time of his dysfunction, he was choosing to see the glass half empty and being very negative. But he learned in jail, he learned about the power of choice. And so what we have to do is kind of focus on that power that choice has. But then it becomes a question of why can't I choose to get up and follow the light? And what are the barriers preventing me from following the light? And maybe, you know, it's the issue of you don't have enough people to surround you who are positive. Maybe it's who you're hanging around. Maybe it's you feel like it's so overwhelming that my routine has become so deeply emotional. If I change, it's going to threaten my level of safety and security. But that ability to choose is so powerful. So how do you choose? Well, you got to start small and take one habit at a time or one small step at a time, and maybe do a 14-day challenge or a 30-day challenge. Maybe write down what you'd like to change and make a plan. But again, that network, we've talked about this before, the network that you surround yourself with. My hunch is, Melissa, you don't like to hang around negative people on a regular habitual basis. I mean, you probably are more are happier when you're with positive people.
It's less stressful. But if I am around people who are struggling, not Debbie Downer so much, but people who are struggling, I do okay with them because I think they're open to let me find a resource, let me find a way out. But no, when people are just, they want to live in the negative or knock people or judge people or judge situations, I have a hard time with it. Yeah, it's hard.
Yeah, sure.
That's draining.
So what, you know, I guess where we're at right now is really asking the question, what do I do if I'm stuck, if I'm down, if I'm in darkness and I want to get myself up? And I almost think you have to really, first of all, write down what are the obstacles preventing you from moving forward. And if you just get quiet and just in a quiet moment, just say, you know, what do I want to do? What's the desired goal? And what are the obstacles preventing me from moving forward? And then start small and make that plan and then invite other people, friends, cousins, sisters, siblings, whatever, to kind of help you with that. But you've got to start somewhere. And life, Melissa, I can't emphasize this enough. Life is so short. We've said that before, but it really is short. And you know, we're 40, 45, 50, 55, 60, and all of a sudden we're 65 years old. Man, I wish I had done that. And that we've said that before as well. So it's all about, you know, really getting a hold of your life, being introspective and saying, do I really want to improve my quality of life? And then you've got to ask yourself, do I have friends around me that can say, hey, you know what, you're in an abnormal place, but for you, it's normal. For the individual who's in that compartment in their brain, it's very normal.
Right. But, exactly.
But they need some people to just knock on the door and say, hey, there's something better over here. That light is better. Follow the light. That light is going to be helpful, kind of thing. Because right now, people who are in that compartment are groping in darkness.
And you can't, you don't know where you're going when you're in the dark. So.
Yeah, no kidding. Yeah, trust me. Somebody gets up at 2:30 in the morning, I never know where I'm going. I need nightlights. But Julius, tell people, if you don't mind, you have a new website. It has your contact info on there. It has all the information they would need, your social sites. What is just your website if people want to connect with you?
Sure. It's N as Nancy, J, CC, Non-Judgmental Christian Counseling, NJCC.online. And you can fill out a form and get back to me there and go from there. But, yeah, Melissa, again, my heart goes out to those people in your listening audience who are just stuck in darkness, mm-hmm. be it drug, be it alcohol, be it whatever it is, be it negativity, materialism, shopaholics, whatever it is, and nobody's perfect. We are all broken. That's the beauty of it.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not perfect. You're not perfect. But we can help each other and encourage each other on as we kind of do that Brendan thing and follow the light.
Yeah, I love that. Julius, thank you so much for diving into this morning. I really appreciate it.
Thank you for all you do, Melissa. Have a good day.
You too. Julius Dudick's here on WICC. We are going into part two of getting that new job. Many of you have voiced that a goal of yours in this new year is getting a new job or switching careers. And so Julie Balke of Julie on the Job, she's our career strategist. She's been giving us some tips and tricks, things that we should be looking out for. Last week, we really looked at resume building. And by the end of the segment, we just started to scratch the surface on LinkedIn profiles and the importance of LinkedIn. So I thought we would dedicate an entire segment to LinkedIn, taking your questions this morning. Good morning, Julie. Welcome back. How are you?
Good morning. I have to tell you, I saw this stat. I haven't had a chance to dig into it, but I think it was on CNBC, did a survey that 96% of people, they said they want to look for a new job in 2023. That's
yes.
Crazy.
Yeah. I think I know what you're talking about. And I saw something similar where it was a big chunk of Americans looking for new jobs. Yeah. It's a big amount of money. Yeah, amount of people, I should say.
You know what is so interesting? So you can have a story that says all these companies are laying off thousands of people. Then you have this other story that seems to conflict, because you would think back in the day that sort of stat made people cower and hang on to their crappy jobs. And now people are saying, yeah, I think I'll be okay. Mm-hmm. I'm going to find something else regardless of that. And so that is a huge culture shift in the way we look at work.
I think it's all also, I don't know about you, but I think, Julie, it's also really relative. When you look at changing careers and taking that risk, we're not looking at the same kinds of jobs that we were 10, 20 years ago, where you had these amazing benefits or you were getting these incredible salaries or that you had pensions. That just doesn't really, at least here in Connecticut, that doesn't really exist. For most jobs.
Yeah.
So the risk is really not that risky anymore. Like to just
exactly.
try something new, you're not really giving up much. So
exactly. And employers are, and this is where employers are really, kind of wringing their hands, because they don't really know what to do about it. And so they're just sort of flailing. And so So this is, if you are one of those people that's saying, this is a year when I'm going to look for something else, one of the things, as we talked about last week, is you should always have your resume ready. So think about it like if you're like one of those last minute travelers, always have a bag packed. I mean, it's the same sort of thing. And so there's resume, but then your resume, think about it. Your resume is housed on your, in the cloud somewhere or on your laptop, and it's there for you to use when you're ready. But what your resume doesn't help you do is be found. It doesn't help you be a passive job seeker,
mm-hmm.
able to be found. And that's what LinkedIn does.
Exactly.
LinkedIn is your, put it this way, it's your public face. It's your professional public face. So therefore, you should always have it ready to go, ready to pull in the kind of opportunities that you think you want next. And so think of it as a marketing document. It is your public face. So go ahead.
Well, so what's interesting is you're right. It's basically – when you have your document form of a resume, which, you know, if anybody missed that, it is on our podcast. You can go back and listen to Julie's tips on making a great resume and what should be there and what shouldn't be. Which, by the way, Julie, I thought of you the other day. So my sister is looking at other jobs, and she has a background in ballroom. She went to school for it, got her degree in it. She actually was a finalist, or she was in the top 40 for So You Think You Can Dance right before the pandemic. And
So
she's going into a totally, I mean, could not be more unrelated industry. And so she's been doing interviews and things like that. And she just did an interview in New York the other day, and she goes, it was so weird, Melissa. She goes, most of the interview was about my ballroom. And she's like, why are you asking me about this? She goes, you know, my recruiter told me to put it on my resume. I couldn't figure out why. It has nothing to do with my jobs. I'm like, oh, I learned that last week from Julie Bielke. She said, if you're an MLB player, but you want to be an accountant, you should still write the MLB thing on there, because they're going to want to talk to you about that. And there are things that they will bring over from your past career and say, hey, this actually makes you very much a marketable person for this position. So it's just funny, because I thought, oh, real life. There you go. Julie Bielke. I mean, I knew you told the truth, but it was very funny. So
friends this weekend who were are really not very happy in their jobs, but they don't really know what to do. And I said, well, let's start with your LinkedIn profile. Let's start talking about what is it that you want a potential employer to know about you. Mm-hmm. And when you get stuck and you aren't sure what to do next, it's so easy to kind of stay there and spin. And unfortunately, then I've sat across from people who've spun for 30 plus years, and now they're just completely lost. And so if you know you are in a role or a place that's not a good fit for you, you can't sit there and wait for it to get better unless you have signs or things going on that you think it might be. Maybe new leadership's coming in. You know, there can be things that can cause hope, but if it looks pretty pitiful, and these friends this weekend both work for privately held companies, and their boss is the issue, and it's not going to get any better. And so think about, you remember when we took high school or college English, there were Cliff Notes or Spark Notes, depending on your generation. So think about your LinkedIn profile as your Spark Notes, your Cliff Notes, the highlights of who you are. Don't just cut and paste your entire resume on there. You want your LinkedIn profile to be a reflection of who you are in summary. So therefore, I always say a really bad LinkedIn profile is almost worse than none at all. Because if your public face is kind of a crappy picture and partial sentences and words and phrases and misspellings, and you really haven't taken the opportunity to fill it out in full, it is impossible not only for people to find you, but then once they find you, they aren't getting a clear picture of who you are and what you could possibly bring to their organization. And so think of it as bait on a hook. Therefore, the bait has to be tasty.
I like the fishing reference, because it's true. It's sort of like you said the same thing. You don't want to just, copy and paste and put the same jargon. And I would think, too, to that point, Julie, that you also want, things even as simple as like your profile picture, and then they have like a banner picture. You want that to also mirror who you are, I would think. All right. What should we be doing on LinkedIn? Julie Bielke, our career strategist, is here. Let's start with the first question this morning, Julie. What should be included? We sort of talked about that. So how often should I be updating my profile?
It really depends on what your career goals are. You can, LinkedIn is a great source of leads and contacts for me. So I'm on there a couple times a week. You look at who viewed your profile. You make sure, first of all, you've got to make sure that you've got a professional picture. You've got a strong about statement and a nice headline. If you're listening, you can go to mine and look at it. It's Julie Bielke, Bauke, if you want to see what those different sections look like. Now, I spend a fair amount of time on there. I'm on there maybe three times a week, posting things, posting ideas, posting career tips, things like that. And so for me, because that's a great source of clients for us, that makes sense for me. But if you are just literally want to be known for your profession, make sure you want to be seen to recruiters. When you get contacts, when someone makes a connection with you, go look at their profile and decide, does it make sense to be connected to this person? If it's a recruiter, heck yes. If it's somebody in your field, heck yes. If it's somebody who you can tell by their profile, they're probably going to try to sell you something. I really avoid those because there are a lot of those people out there too. But in general, I'm not super picky about who I accept a connection from because I share a lot of content and I think a lot of people just want to see my content to get career tips. So you want to, if you've got, you don't have a picture, your thing is half filled out and you have 10 connections, you might as well not be there. Take a look, connect with people in your field. Connect with people in companies that you are interested potentially in working for. And say something like, you know, hi, so-and-so, you know, I saw your profile and see that we're in the same field. I'd love to connect. Or you work for the XYZ company. I've always admired what you guys do. I'd love to connect. So you want to put a little reason on there for connecting. And it literally could be, I really like following your content. You know, please accept my invitation to connect. And so think about when you go to networking events, you're there to meet people who you have something in common with. Think mm-hmm. of LinkedIn the same way. It's a huge, I always say that LinkedIn is going to rule the world because when you think about the database they have of people and that are doing all kinds of interesting things, LinkedIn keeps updating what they do. And anything from making sure that you are putting all the skills you have on there, making sure that you're being super, you know, focused on what you put on there in terms of skills. So you have a choice of hundreds of skills to choose from. Make sure you're not putting all of them on there. Get really specific. What are the things you're good at? Who do you want to find you? And what do you want to be known for? You think like a marketing person. And I know it's really hard to do it for yourself, but getting really clear on who you are and what you bring to the party and to a potential employer. If you're going to go on an interview, you have to be ready to talk about those things anyway. Mm-hmm. So this is another part of packing your bag so you can be ready to talk, especially if you are really focused on changing jobs in this year. That's one of the things you can do for yourself right now so that you are ready. Now, if you don't want – another small tip here. If you don't want your employer to see that you're in there just massively updating your LinkedIn profile,
yeah.
And sometimes, you know, you can turn off your notifications,
okay.
Which means that when you update this or you update that, your whole it doesn't show up on your page.
You're right, just they'd have to be doing a deep dive things. To go, oh, I noticed that. Yes, I see what you're
exactly,
saying.
Yeah. Exactly. Not that employers should care because everyone – should always have their LinkedIn profile updated because it's not always about changing jobs. Really, it's about making professional connections with other people that you might be able to learn from or they could learn from you. And so even if you're not looking to change jobs, having an updated LinkedIn profile that really zeroes in on what your professional capabilities are is really the least you can do. And having that in your resume up to date, maybe have it reviewed by someone who really knows you professionally so you can make sure that you're not selling yourself short, because we are more likely to sell ourselves short than we are to over-exaggerate unless we're George Santos. Then in that case, you know, everything's wrong.
Yeah, right.
But, you know, have somebody you know look at it and say, does this really fully reflect who I am professionally? I mean, put your job description on there. And like
yeah.
I said, look at mine for maybe a guide and just kind of look what I've done and mirror it with your own experience.
Yeah. And really quickly, Julie, because I know we're running out of time, but as far as posting is concerned, I think that's another question. Should people be posting and engaging? I know you said check in a couple times a week, but should you be posting at least once a week? And what are you
Definitely. Posting?
So
I would post things that show off your professional expertise. Find an article that has something to do with your profession or your industry that you found interesting. Post the link and comment on it. Also, comment on other people's stuff. Comment on other people's posts. That's a great point, Brett. I found that when I was in project management, this was a tool that was super helpful to me. You know, something like that. You want to engage, but you don't have to be there all, you know, check in once a week, maybe on the weekends. That's what a lot of people do is they go through they scroll through their feed to look at what are other people talking about? And frankly, also, it's a fantastic source to find a job. Like I said, LinkedIn is going to own the world because they are now doing a ton of job postings. And once you start to look at certain jobs, it'll show up on the right side of your profile. It'll say, take a look at these jobs. These jobs are recommended for you based on your profile. And so the more robust your profile is, the more suggestions you're going to get for jobs, and you can apply right on LinkedIn. So it is a fantastic resource, and I have to say they're managing it beautifully. And so you've got to be engaged there. But I would also say really quickly, no politics or religion. There are people that post political stuff, and I don't do that. You know,
yeah.
So think about, you're in a party. Mm-hmm. We're not supposed to be talking about politics and religion at work. And I think it's just stick to professional sort of stuff. Stick to your professional knowledge, experience, and look for how you can help others. That's one of the tenets of great networking anyway, is first, you know, give first, take second. So how can you give of your knowledge and your expertise and your resources to others? Because that is going to gain you followers, connections, and also the attention of recruiters and other hiring authorities.
That's so true. And I agree with you, Julie. I think they've done a really great job of really keeping it to a professional profile network and really not diverting to, you know, you've seen these other social media platforms that really have kind of, you know, crossed over or picked up other people, you know, other platforms, things. And I just think that LinkedIn has stayed true and true, basically the same as it has from the beginning. And it's showing a lot of great success for a lot of people. So
it really is.
Julie Bauke, I appreciate you diving into this morning. And, I look forward to what we are going to dive into next week.
All right. See you then.
Thank you so much. Julie Bauke, our career strategist on WICC. And a reminder, Julie did resume building last week. We've been doing a 2-week series on applying for a new job, how you can do it effectively. So if you missed that, go to our podcast at WICC600.com.